these years. The only way I wasn't killed was one man saving my life over and over. The only way you get away is that someone is here making sure. It's taken me years to know I can't go anymore. I asked for help, I didn't get it. To get away, you need someone on the inside. I'm there for you. I said that if you love me, you'd go.
The following episode of the Walking Dead podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier source of spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. Choose from their extensive catalog of over 215,000 audio programs from leading audiobook publishers, comedy specials, magazine and newspaper publishers, business information providers, as well as many other products. Audible is also the preeminent provider of spoken word audio podcasts for Apple's iTunes Store. In addition to audio programs from outside publishers, Audible.com introduces Audible Studios, matching the most imaginative and esteemed authors with the world's best performers, including Academy Award winners, respected stage actors, and Juilliard graduates. Audible Studios produces a diverse catalog of engaging audio adventures for every age. Sign up today for your free, no-obligation trial membership at audibletrial.com/dead. You'll get a free audiobook, and you'll be helping to support The Walking Dead podcast. So head on over to audibletrial.com/dead and start a new adventure today. And now, we're pleased to present the latest episode of The Walking Dead Podcast.
We always think there's going to be more time. And it burns out.
It's The Walking Dead Podcast.
Got any advice for me?
I'd say make a run for it.
This is The Walking Dead Podcast, a podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead television show on AMC and The Walking Dead comic from Image Comics.
Come on!
So sit back, relax, and join the herd.
I went to see was the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Oh yeah, how was that?
I liked it a lot.
Did you like all of the Hunger Games movies?
I enjoyed them. Yeah, I wasn't like into it. Like my wife read all the books. I went with her to see it because I was interested. Learning a little bit about the history of Pan Am, and it's interesting to me why it's that way. It kind of reminds me of the CRM. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Without further ado.
Yes.
And welcome to another episode of The Walking Dead Podcast. I'm Scott, and here with me, as always, forever, is Mr. Gary.
Hey, it's me. I'm here. Still. We both are. Still. It's great.
Gary's actually been here the entire week, waiting by the phones for your phone calls, and I don't know what the hell's the matter with all of you. Nobody called.
Yeah, I don't even pay for Zoom either. So I don't know how I stay subscribed all week long without... I'm literally always here.
I have unlimited Zoom hours, so...
Oh, okay.
I just leave my account on and you're there and I just check every now. He's still there.
I'm like my uncle back in the day when AOL first became a thing with the instant messenger when it was like kind of in the early phases.
Mail.
He would just leave his computer on 24/7, plugged in, powered on, booted up.
You hear that?
He'd leave it on just for that. That you've got mail or an instant message, that little bleep noise it made, like with AIM. He just leave it on 24/7, and my dad and him thought it was such a cool thing. But
wow,
what a day. What a day.
AIM. I used to use that.
Me too.
And then I used another one. I forget what it was called. The ICQ.
Oh, I remember ICQ. Man, those are the days.
Yep. Well,
but I mean, at least we're a little bit better these days than having to draw pictures on cellular phones and trade them to each other to like.
Yeah, I would send messages. I'm a horrible artist. You're like, who is that supposed to be?
Well,
That's you, Gary. And you'd be like, Gary would be like, that looks like a Mr. Bill with a black mouth. That's your beard, Gary.
I love how they made a point to say that he couldn't draw Carl right forever to get it right for Rick. Like he got, you know, those several pictures of Michonne and, you know, Judith and, but could never get Carl right for him.
I guess
like
he couldn't get the eye.
I guess, right? No, that patch ain't right. I'm not paying for that.
I can't. Yeah. I'm not, no. There's a hole right there. There's a hole right there that doesn't look like a hole where a guy's eye got blown out. You need the gaping hole.
I kind of pictured it as like more of a tragic thing for Rick.
Yeah.
Just to show how messed up he was. Just being stuck in there. And he's like, okay, this is enough to see Michonne and stuff like that. But Carl's gone. And nothing really matches his son, you know?
I really regret that they didn't replicate the scene in the comic where Negan first sees... Where Carl takes off his patch to show Negan.
Yeah.
His eye socket, Negan goes, oh, it's so gross. Can I touch it? Can I touch it?
I forgot how goofy Negan was about that, but my takeaway was I remember Negan just being impressed that the kid had the balls to just like show him, you know? And like,
you should leave the eye patch off.
Yep.
He says, I don't know if you're going to get much pussy with that, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
All right, well, this is episode 246 of the podcast. Today we will be discussing The Ones Who Live. I wrote it down this time so I'd get it right.
Nice.
The Ones Who Live, episode 3. Bye.
Bye.
First, the sanctioned boilerplate, which, if you might have noticed, is much shorter than the old one. As always, you can leave your comments and feedback by emailing us at twdpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, so that's the boilerplate. Sort of a file.
The boilerplates these days, they're thinner, but that doesn't mean they lack power. Just throw them out there, you know, like technology.
I will go with the optimistic tone of that.
You should.
It's more like a boiler coaster.
Boiler coaster. But I mean, you know, they make those little things that like heat up wax candles and slowly melt them. It's just a really strong version of that.
It's a little Bunsen thing.
Little Bunsen burner.
Little Bunsen burner. Or the one that's the little candle. Sterno.
Yeah.
It's a Sterno can. It's a boiler Sterno. All right. Well, and so now on to the main event, our recap discussion of The Ones Who Live, episode 3. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye-bye.
Oh. No.
I had to.
Well, just as an editor's note, I didn't make any notes today because I got caught up with something. I didn't even get to watch the episode again. And then we went out to dinner. So I'm like, Gary's just going to have to intellectually hold up the show today.
So, geez, we're screwed.
aboard ship. Yeah. All hands abandon ship. Icebergs ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, what can I say? Monty's in Coconut Grove called and. We had to go have our food by the water in the nice weather.
It sounds amazing.
So, yeah, it was.
You got to enjoy that weather because very soon in our pretty close enough range of area, it's going to get pretty hot pretty quick. So,
yes,
we got to enjoy this nice, slightly cool weather with breezes while we have it.
Yeah, it was nice because my wife and I had not off a lot of nights. So it was nice to go out to dinner and she wanted to go there. And so she enjoyed it. Nice. They have a specialty drink there called a painkiller.
Ooh. Which,
yes, there's a good reason why it's called that because you don't feel nothing bad. I've had it before. It's a splendid beverage, Gary. It's splendid.
I mean, by name alone, I want one. I'm like, kill my pain's great. You know,
I felt like, you know, like I like this. I don't give a fuck about nothing right now. Nothing bothers me. It's nice. Like I guzzled a whole can of Lexapro.
It's like your red kryptonite. You just no inhibitions anymore.
Just call me Cal.
Nice.
Yeah, that was.
You got a little spit curl kind of almost thing going on there. There's a little bit of, you know, bangs beside it, but you almost got a spit curl. Me? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the end of the day.
But I mean, like, if you were trying to manicure one, you easily could.
This little thing.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. You little Clark Kent going on.
Yeah. No. Don't say that.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't want to spoil your identity. I'm sorry.
What? See, I've even got the glasses on.
Yeah. Yeah. Miami Superman right there.
Did you see the Jimmy Kimmel thing where he replicates it's Ben Affleck and Henry Cavill are on
the
show, and he's at the party that they're supposed to be in Batman versus Superman.
Doesn't Eisenberg show up at the end of it too?
Yes, he does.
Yeah,
they're having. He goes, man, it's you. I mean, you're just wearing glasses. It's obviously you. He says, "You don't leave me alone. I'm going to throw you up in the air into orbit."
I loved that. Yeah, I loved that. Yeah. That was great. That should have been in the movie. That would have made the movie that much better.
Yeah, it would have. And then there wouldn't have been so much complaining about it.
Right?
Such an Academy Award winner denied, like Greta Gerwig denied. As I mentioned during the somewhat extended pre-production discussion we had today, I am finding that I am a victim of the Netflixitis when it comes to watching these, that I find it very annoying and very frustrating to have to wait a week till the next episode comes out. But of course, you know, I'll endure, such as the tragic life of a TV watcher. But this was, I thought the end of this one was fantastic, but, it didn't really impress me as much as the ending of the very first episode was the best.
Yeah.
Just where they find each other. And even the ending of the second one, which I liked a lot, it just, those were better, I think, than the jumping out of the helicopter, although that was great. Andrew Lincoln said that's the best. He said that was really his favorite episode ending of all the episodes he did was getting to jump out of a helicopter. I mean, from his standpoint as an actor, he thinks he's jumping off a helicopter.
You know, one of the things I think, though, I want to say, though, one of the things I thought watching these three episodes, even though, like, the first one, I was all in. I loved it. The Michonne episode, I was a little less so. Like, I loved Nat. You know, I loved the story going on.
Yeah.
But I wasn't 100% as into it, but I still liked it. I was obviously going to watch the third one. But the third one was kind of not necessarily the last straw, but that was the one that kind of hinged on whether I'm really fully into the show or not for me.
Yeah.
And it got me fully invested again.
Okay.
I loved most of everything about it, really.
Yeah.
There's
a couple of things I had issue with, but they're snooty little technical things that aren't really impactful on the story.
And I think for me, as it is for you, probably what you're saying, I think a lot of that hinges on kind of the familiar Walking Dead tropes, where like up and down episodes. Some episodes were all action. Some episodes were way more drama. Some were kind of, wouldn't say filler, but not our favorite, you know. I think from something else I read recently that they're kind of experimenting now with these spinoffs in the way they were hoping to in the later Walking Dead seasons by doing more multiple episodes with different pairings and focusing more on spread apart stories with just one group, but for a few episodes. So,
well, that's kind of reminiscent in a way of season 6 of Fear the Walking Dead, where each episode focused on a different one of the ensemble characters. Like the first one was about Morgan, and then the second one was about Alicia and Strand. The next one was about John Dory. The next one was about June.
I'm probably not saying my thoughts clearly, but what I mean is, I appreciate the whole how show with
is, gotcha.
This whole show is one pairing, yeah. Extended arc of one pairing.
Right. Yeah.
With a few familiar characters thrown in, but it's not the whole group, the whole thing. I feel like that's what they were trying to get to towards the end of Walking Dead, like little comic book miniseries with individual characters. And then they could eventually come together for the Walking Dead Avengers, you know, and they're all there. The whole gang gets back together, but it doesn't have to be every season, everybody. So I wonder, like, if obviously COVID threw a wrench into their plans, I'm sure strike threw even a different concern into their thing.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah, so I mean, there were most productions, even as big ones as Walking Dead were at its height, took a while to catch up after COVID, you know, and movies especially are just barely starting to get back into full production, and then the strike happens. And then now they're just kind of stuck. Originally, this was going to be a movie, or two movies,
three,
I believe.
Three movies.
Three, it was?
Yeah.
So they basically split it up in episodes and recorded some new stuff, and
they turned it into
a miniseries, right?
They converted it into 6 miniseries episodes.
Yeah.
And I read that was a direct result of COVID. That they decided to do that instead of doing the 3 feature length films, which is probably they'll probably look back and that was probably the best decision, because I don't know that I always had an issue. How could, you know, if you didn't watch The Walking Dead, why would you give a shit about those 3 movies?
Yeah.
Something I made about, if you didn't watch The Sopranos, then why would you care about Tony Soprano's backstory? You won't. I mean, it won't be The Many Saints of Newark. It's a good mafia film, but you have no emotional investment in it if you didn't watch The Sopranos.
Well, with this episode, I really appreciated how it started off with a flashback and then a slightly less flashback, and then set you into the episode that also built up into things that we hadn't fully seen. And it was kind of like a cool way of doing a recap, you know, in the beginning.
I loved the scene between him and Jadis at the beginning, where she basically, you know, she explains that she mentions the army doesn't control things here. You don't have to watch what you say. She said she says right there, they don't control her much to their chagrin, which sets to me up even more of like the example I made about Rome last week, ancient Rome, is that there must have been an agreement made between whoever was running the military, which I'm assuming was Beale, based upon the scene in this episode where he talks about that sword.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name of the general who owned that sword, but
me neither. I feel horrible for not remembering. The Civil War general, right?
I think it was Revolutionary War.
A Revolutionary, right.
Yeah.
Right.
He talks about that. And so I'm assuming Beale was probably the senior commander of the CRM when he was probably a general in the Pennsylvania National Guard. And so he was clearly there when it happened. That they probably came to an agreement that the army, go do whatever you're going to do. We can even make stuff here, but the city, we don't want to sacrifice freedom and democracy. We'll keep it safe. But they came to an accord where the army would go do its things, but they had to be based outside the city, and that they didn't exert authority over the actual running of the city. So I would be really fascinated to find out what the actual political dynamic is between the leader of the army and the leader of the civilian government.
Yeah.
Since it appears from clips in the opening credits that it's a democracy. How does that work where they've got this general who basically has this dictatorial empire that he goes out and slaughters everybody that even gets near, even comes within proximity of Philadelphia, but yet in the city they're running this democratic republic, basically the city state, and that they were able to salvage 200,000 people and keep them alive in this city while keeping it secret.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I just thought, I wonder if my first thought when we found out a little bit more about the organization of the whole structure and that there's like, for that summit, there's so many different captains and leaders coming in and, you know, higher up military people.
Really odd to me.
But the way they're making that comment that that's happening and they're trying to prep, or my other thought was maybe they're trying to draw Rick out by giving him that information. But if that's not the case, because it's been thrown out there a few times now, there's this big summit happening.
Yeah, only because he was involved in, but think of the expense and the equipment and the personnel to it's clearly in the Rocky Mountains or someplace far distant, because Jadis mentions it's a day and a half flight.
Right.
A day and a half.
My original thought was maybe they were trying to bait Rick, is kind of what I was saying. But then as we saw, they gave into it and they saw the plans and went out on the trip. On the trip and started, you know.
Well, they completely reconstructed this place to where it's brand new. They rebuilt it and it's now a functioning military base.
Yeah.
I thought that, and then the scene where they're clearing. I'm trying to figure out what exactly the hell the master plan is here.
Yeah,
they call it a forward operating base because it's significant, substantially distant from the main area. But they've committed a substantial amount of assets to build up this base in terms of getting the equipment out there to build it, stationing personnel there. The fact that they've got people doing various things. So this group under the command of Thorne has to go clear this Walker herd. I love the whole dynamic where they use pneumatic guns.
Yeah, that was cool.
Up close for that type of thing to limit the noise from the gunshots. I thought that's really interesting to me. And then that thing that they pushed that exploded.
Yeah,
that was. I didn't know what the hell that was at first.
I bet that's going to be the weekly mission in Walking Dead: No Man's Land, where you can play with me and Scott.
Possibly.
It reminded me of something you would see in the game where you have to take turns pushing a cart together and then, you know, it makes sounds and explodes. Anyways.
Yeah. No, take this thing that makes noise to attract the walkers. Yeah. Well, there's the one mission. There's that one of those episode missions where you have to run to different rooms to shut off a boombox that's playing music.
Yep.
And
to shut off the car, you know,
right.
And the car takes a few turns. The
subsequent mission, they don't put any audio out, but they just show it making noise. But in this one, they have the same song playing from these boom boxes. By the time I get to the last one, I'm going nuts. And I'm serious. Turn the damn thing off because
it's that bad.
It's the same sound over and over again. You click one, the next one comes on, you get it, and then you go get the last one. And by then, you're like, oh my God, I want to kill myself.
Well, if Scott hasn't just sold you himself as he, you know, really tried to do there, please play with us on Walking Dead: No Man's Land, the game where you can join Death Squad Z. We're really fun. Have a really good time there.
It's called Daryl's Nightmare is the name of that episode.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yep. So I like that. And I like the song.
Anyways,
Sorry. It's not Easy Street from Annie, which is the one that's in the episode, but it's the same sound over and over and over and over again. You could probably find it. It's in one of the season episodes.
I could probably find it, but would I want to?
You get stuff. All of them, you get stuff.
That's like true.
10 radios, and you get a whole bunch of other resources by clearing the missions.
That's a good way to look at it. Yeah, you're like, you get stuff. You get stuff. It's a fun menu, too. You get stuff.
Yeah, I got one where it's 800 upgrade tokens for Jadis.
Nice.
Mid two levels, I advanced her tactics.
With her shit haircut?
I love that line, too.
That was the best line.
Shit haircut. Because it's so funny watching these two British actors who are speaking with American accents. And then Andrew Lincoln threw in a really very British colloquialism. It's a shit whatever.
Yeah. So what I took from it too, and I'm sure you were thinking on the same lines, was Jadis is into Rick and keeps hoping that Rick is going to be like really reciprocative and appreciative that, you know, she got him in there and, you know, whatever, and he's safe and this and that, and he survived, but he's never really been appreciative like that. And then
he doesn't like her at all.
Of course. And he's always, his main mission anyway has been to get back to Michonne and, you know, his kids. So he wants nothing to do with anybody, but especially wasn't thinking about her. But she's always kind of had this thing going for him. And then now Rick, I feel like, was kind of trying to play that a little bit and play on that desire, but also, you know, help him out and be his ally in this thing. So trying to play the angles a little bit.
That conversation they have at the forward base when she says to him, "I don't think she's seen me yet." And then she stands next to him and stops. And then Michonne has to look up and she's, oh, she saw me.
Yep. That was great.
That was funny. That was so, I mean, that is Polly McIntosh is such a good, does that type of thing really well.
And she's great, and she's always been really cool and great in a like Nick Cagean sort of way, you know, like off kilter, but cool, always a good performance, whether it was normal Gimple, or you know, whatever. I don't
Gimple
know.
Mentions that the chemistry that she and Andrew Lincoln have is they very good at playing off each other.
They are.
And that's what the scenes that are with them are really good. And again, it always strikes me as something kind of really impressive that they're both very, very British and they play and they're playing two Americans, two British people playing Americans. Since he stopped, I noticed in those inside the episode segments, I noticed before when he was well into his Walking Dead days, his accent kind of muddled. It kind of smoothed out a little bit, the British accent. And you could tell it was in there. It was sort of like what happened with Maggie, with Lauren Cohan's British accent.
Yeah.
Of course, Lauren Cohan's originally from New York.
Right.
She grew up in England and then moved back to the United States. But every now and then, certain words, she has sort of a British twang to it, more or less. Since he ended his initial run as Rick, he's really gotten back the full British accent. Yes, I thought that was interesting, the pneumatic guns, the Jadis conversation in the past. Also, I think she looks much better with longer hair.
Yeah, she did look really good with that wig. That was in my notes too, actually.
Yeah, well, she has, I think normally she has, Polly McIntosh has longer hair,
right? But just having the longer hair, like, rather than the punk haircut or
that
the
haircut that she has in this is just, what is that?
And even they flashed back to it, or I don't know if it was maybe recreated scenes, but with that first hair we saw him with the bleach tips on it.
Yeah.
Like not as good as the other one we saw in the
Millennium Park.
Right.
The other two things that really jumped out at me, and I didn't understand what one of them was, how up on the wall by where they stabbed the walkers, it says Grimes 68.
You know, I was thinking that too, and that was in my notes. I don't think we saw that before this episode. If we did, they definitely didn't make it a point like they did in this one.
I didn't know.
Sorry, what?
But it was. I didn't know what it meant.
If it was up there in the last couple episodes?
No, I don't recall.
Oh, that's what I was saying.
I didn't notice. Maybe it wasn't. We didn't notice, but I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know if it was a reference to him or if it was just something else, Grime 68. And then I was thinking about it. And I was wondering if they'd mention it in The Insider. They didn't mention it at all.
The first time I saw that, I assumed only in this episode. If it was in the first two, I didn't notice it. But in this episode, the first time I saw it, I assumed it was a kill count for Grimes.
That's exactly what I concluded it probably was.
That was my first thought.
He's got a high score and they put it there.
Like in high school or college basketball arenas, you know, they have, that's what I assumed. But
he's probably got the high kill count.
But
because they show that scene in the first episode where he's just one after another, he's just getting into a rage, getting worked up, stabbing one of these things after other with what it's got to be the coolest stick killer, where they stick it in and twist
the kill stick, they call it, I think, right?
Yeah, it just wrecks. It's got that serrated.
It's got that perfect like combo of stabby things that go into the eye socket and stuff. And then, but they're also sharpened and twist. And
then they twist it to kind of.
Yeah, but they got the hook. And it's so cool. And such great design.
I just assume he's got, and they were all cheering him on in the back.
Yeah.
And I assume that's he's got the high score on the video game that day.
I wouldn't be surprised if in episode 4, Michonne's name gets up on that wall, because she definitely went through some walkers in this episode.
I don't know, because they ran. So
yeah, I don't. No, I'm just saying, even they showed her at that wall,
it's more likely she'll be hanging off that wall.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I am now even more wondering what is in that echelon briefing that removed all doubt from Thorne's mind as to what they were doing.
Yeah,
to the point that she was ready to shoot Michonne,
which does play. That does play in well also into the way which, speaking of Pollyanna McIntosh, Jadis is so sworn into this group now that she's afraid to lose her position in it. Like, that's her biggest thing in life, her whole life. Like, she's survived out in the zombie land for years and years. The biggest thing in her life right now is not even just surviving, but like keeping her position in what they have there.
I love
she's so bought in.
Yeah. I love what she explained they were doing. Her and the garbage people, that they would collect people for, that they would.
And Rick was her final card to get in.
Apparently,
someone of his caliber.
Apparently, the in the Walking Dead: The World Beyond, they explain why they collect people. Is that they're trying to find that part of it is they're trying to find a cure and immunity. And so part of the people are people they test to see various effects and whether they're resistant. And I didn't really get that whole thing. But there's a couple of videos on YouTube about the history of the serum. Now, how that person would have any history or material on the serum is another question. But they're interesting theories. But I like the explanation that Thorne gives when she's talking to Michonne about why they don't bring in bees. Or what is it the B is the superior number, or is it the A? I don't remember. Whatever the classification is for both Rick and Thorne. They don't bring A. Yeah, they don't bring those people in because they said they would be compelled to look around and try and figure out what the secrets are.
That was kind of what I was thinking too, actually, leading up to this, as we've seen more of them, was that's why A's are such a volatile commodity within their system. Mm-hmm. And they're only used to be high ranking military personnel. And that's basically it, is because the A's are the ones that could also shake the system or try to leave.
Exactly.
Or, you know, and they don't want that. They want sheep. So they want mostly bees, because mostly bees can live in their system, spread good word of mouth, be happy, be content. New people come around. Hey, you want to join in? We're all happy, like a cult. Like, come on, join us. But you don't get to see the dark military side of it, of all the really strong, tough people that kind of don't want to be there eventually maybe get their head around it, but they're yeah. just the most hurt, angry, badass people that could be in that group, but they're just on the outskirts.
I'm just wondering what the master plan is here.
I don't know either.
The Echelon briefing apparently is such profound information that it would take remove all doubt from anybody's mind, especially an independent thinker.
They did say that, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what it is their plan is, because while I can understand, like, for example, they're using mustard gas or chlorine gas to keep people away or just wipe out anybody that gets too close to Philadelphia, but they seem to be in their outskirt when they go out past, you know, the immediate area of Philadelphia. They still kill people. They still go out and kill people. And I'm thinking maybe they're doing there anyway, because they don't do this really in Fear the Walking Dead that I've seen so far, is that they are clearing. They're just clearing everybody, and their plan is to expand out and repopulate with the people they have that they've already vetted.
What I gathered is if it's a large group that could potentially be a threat, with their only observation really, which is a good heads up, and they have a lot of them apparently, the helicopters, because I don't think they have been shown to have just like cameras around yet, way surrounding areas. Like, they definitely don't have a network or anything, if they have any. So basically they have helicopters, maybe they have some people on horses or cars or whatever, but like they don't have like a really good surround network. So if they happen to see someone, then if it's like a little tiny group of two or three people, one cottage, one family,
bring them in, maybe
they bring them in, give them a chance. If not, they probably kill them.
they see if they're A's or B's.
Yeah.
Initially, like she mentioned, when Okafor found her, he gave her the rundown. You come in, you can't leave. And are you going to come? And she knew he told her, if you say no, I'm going to have to kill you right here.
Yeah. Which seems like Rick fully buys into now.
Well, I think it's more like he was resigned to it. Because he was beginning to trust that Okafor had some good ideas. And that kind of segues into one of the problems I have with...
What's that?
Like, what was his name? The little guy, Nat made
Nat.
These exploding projectile things. And when Michonne first fires one off, the explosion is huge, right?
Yeah.
He fires it and it's huge. It's a big explosion. But he supposedly fires this at the helicopter and it's just an explosion that's big enough to blow up Okafor.
Yeah.
But it doesn't blow the helicopter out of the sky. Now maybe he's got different strengths scream sticks. I don't know, but it just seems to me this is another example of Hollywood not understanding how explosions work. Like the size of that device that they blew up in the woods that they pushed and then they ran. I don't care what they were hiding behind. A tree wouldn't have helped them with the force of that explosion. The other minor technical point is, again, and this comes from my being in the military, the rank structure that they're using.
Oh, is it off?
Two people that in charge are sergeant's major? No. A sergeant major doesn't do that type of thing. Now, obviously, it's fictitious. It's fictional. Maybe they do in the Civic Republic military, but it seems odd that they would give them both that rank, because that's the highest enlisted rank is sergeant major.
If they're trying to follow any level of structure that's semi-pop culture appropriate, you know, not fully historical all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that, what is the higher up guy we've seen so far?
The Major General.
Major General?
That's Terry O'Quinn's character.
Yes, Major okay. General. Terry O'Quinn. Yes, okay. Thank you.
And then in The World Beyond, we see a full colonel from the CRM. And then Okafor's a lieutenant colonel, which is the one rank below colonel.
Okafor is the higher ranked one we've seen before?
No. The higher ranked one we've seen before on this show.
Yeah.
Well, the highest ranking person we've seen on the show is Terry O'Quinn, the general.
Okay.
He's in charge of the entire Civic Republic military. And the fact that he's a major general suggests a specific size, that there's maybe 20,000 of these guys, because a major general is generally in charge of a division, and a division's roughly 20 to 30,000 men. So,
thanks for giving me insight on the scope. I really had no idea.
Possibly, so he would be equivalent to a division commander. So they probably, over the course of time, have salvaged what the units of the Pennsylvania National Guard and turned it into more or less administratively like a division, with support aircraft and ground, other ground elements, and logistical stuff. But generally, you would, a sergeant major is a senior, is the senior enlisted rank, but this person isn't the one who's in direct command of troops in the field. They're like over, they usually have like 180, 150 soldiers or Marines underneath them that have their own unit NCOs, and they're in charge of the, they're like the senior enlisted.
Oh, wow.
They don't generally get into direct command like they show in this. So that may be dramatic license. That may be the way the CRM works. But usually if you're going to put, and you wouldn't put two sergeants major in charge of a reclamation project. You would put an officer in charge of a reclamation project because it's a lot of material. So it's a higher level of supervisory authority. But that doesn't matter. This is a show. So
would it make any difference, though, considering the size of the organization?
No.
That there's only three major cities and maybe a handful of big bases and lots of minor bases all spread throughout. You know, like, it's CRM, a good organization. It's not right. Like
the CRM doesn't take in people from those other two cities. And it's only one city now. They don't take, and remember, they're on opposite ends of the country from each other. Seattle doesn't know where the CRM or the Civic Republic is. Doesn't know the city, doesn't know the, they just get logistical and some, and there's some CRM personnel ostensibly in Seattle, but they don't know where the Civic Republic is.
I didn't fully get that part.
That was the point that they made in, they mentioned it briefly that Omaha and Seattle don't know the location of the Civic Republic.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I remember that.
This is a point that's made in the first episode of The World Beyond. The main character, the young woman who's the president of the high school student government, says she doesn't trust this colonel because we don't know where you are, we don't know where you come from, we don't know anything about, so I don't trust you.
I'm
just wondering if the master plan is to go out and clear and then repipe it there. I don't know, hard to say. But in any case, that was, again, minor things, don't really make much of a difference in the end. Just an interesting note, because generally speaking, Hollywood doesn't understand rank at all.
Yeah, that is true.
Or how that works, sure. Or the way the military is organized. So they come up with all this crap.
Which is why I appreciate things, it seems like, are happening more nowadays, where they really heavily consult with the military, or get at least one or two really solid military advisors to really come in and go through things and make sure it looks good. You know, even some more committed guys like the Tom Cruises of the world actually go in and, you know, spend hours and hours in planes and really get committed to it.
And not so important here.
No,
clearly not so much important.
Obviously, no.
And this could be just, you could explain this by saying this is the way the CRM does it.
Right.
So so there's nothing wrong with it. I just pointed out, I'm going again. Independence Day, the first one, is really full of this type of shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. That was a big offender.
Yeah. But I mean, that's not what the point of the movie is. So it doesn't matter. Well, again, this was a great episode. And I've enjoyed all of them, enjoyed talking about it. I love just, picking it apart a little bit, kind of see what we like. I even like the little nitpicker things I find, because at the end of the day, they don't mean shit. They're just fun to kind of discuss. So,
but what good fan doesn't like discussing the things they love? You know, that's part of the fun of it.
Absolutely. And I mean, I was glad they kept it going in a specialized manner, with again, the pairings, as you mentioned, Negan and Maggie, now Daryl and Carol, and then Michonne and Rick. So I hope that, you know, if they come up with different stuff, I don't know who, you know, I'd be interested to see who they pair off. Maybe Madison and Morgan. Madison and Morgan.
That's great. Definitely.
So
how about just one episode about Rufus from Walking Dead: No Man's Land?
No, that would be cool.
That would be cool. Yeah, Rufus. Was it I am Negan?
Yeah.
The Negan one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that Negan one episode extended thing.
Negan.
Here's Negan. Yes. Yeah. Just do that. Here's Rufus.
That's Rufus. Yeah. And he has his little flamethrower.
Yeah. The
redneck barbecue.
Yeah, that's right.
Redneck barbecue. He has what, that exploding jar of pickles.
The pickles. That's what I use them with these days, even though it's not very strong at all. But I still use it. It's
Rufus
cool.
T. Hardwick. That's his name. Rufus T. Hardwick.
I forgot he had Hardwick's name. That's great.
Yeah, no, he's based on Chris Hardwick's grandfather.
Oh, wow.
Or great uncle or something. Rufus Hardwick.
Well,
Billy.
Speaking of our lost Sir Hardwick, who doesn't get to do an after show anymore. Apparently they haven't done it in a few years. I'm kind of sad about that. I was hoping to watch one with the new show now that I'm really into it.
Yeah. Close it up. Probably the Walking Dead was the last one.
They did, I think, a little bit of Fear the Walking Dead after Walking Dead ended, but
Of course. Yeah.
Eventually they stopped that too. They didn't finish Fear the Walking Dead.
Either. Oh, they didn't?
No, they did a finale thing, I think, but
yeah, the ratings must not have been, I mean, that was it. I found it boring. I used to really like to watch it, but then it just got kind of, you know, over the top with the, you know, self-promotion.
Obviously, I didn't watch much, if any, either. But yeah, I just kind of lost interest. Even the super fan
that they came on and she acted like all these characters were real people.
And they even kept occasionally trying to bring on Walking Dead universe stars, like some of the bigger guys,
yeah,
you know, to come on and talk about Fear the Walking Dead, you know, and it just didn't ever bring an interest.
It kind of fizzled.
Yeah. So. Just like the main show, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, and on
next
that
week,
happy, on that uplifting note,
on a slightly less bummer note, before we start this wrapping up here, I did do a little research today. My phone isn't on me at the moment. I'm sorry about that, but next week we will be talking about the ratings, which will also give us another week of ratings. Also, I have a little spreadsheet thing comparing all of the spinoffs The Walking Dead kind of to it. So we'll kind of get to see a trajectory of the last few years kind of in general, because it'll be interesting to see, because obviously I'm sure, I don't remember, I'm sure we've talked about it in the past, but I'm sure the main show had a slight tick up, at least for the finale, if nothing else, maybe the few episodes leading up to it. Maybe. I don't remember for sure. But I don't even remember what it was at the time. I'm thinking around 6 in my head for the finale. Somewhere around there for the finale. From what I've seen, the second episode, I believe, of this new show got 1 million.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's decent. But also, in my spreadsheet, I just have the Walking Dead stuff laid out.
Yeah.
Before next week's episode, I will also compare it then to the bigger cable shows these days. Cause I remember back in the day, The Walking Dead itself was a huge thing, but nowadays there's even more streamers. Everybody else is more divided. I want to see how that levels out really before I call it.
That would be an interesting, would be an interesting documentary type of research project to see how the plethora of streaming services has sort of further diluted the audience. So you don't have this commitment to a show like The Walking Dead, because now you have so many other places you can go for that type of episodic drama.
You've got me thinking too. We were talking earlier about other things, the strike and the pandemic, and even before that, which didn't affect Walking Dead, obviously the earlier writer's strike in 2007 and the way things like that postpone things and change timelines. And we're still dealing with repercussions just from the pandemic today. In the filming industry, even, you know, just like movie projects and TV, then the strike happened and that slowed down everything again. It'd be curious to see, with just following the Walking Dead timeline, we always talk about how a lot of fans left, it felt like anyways, after Negan's introduction.
Yeah.
You know, with the killing of Glenn and Abraham. And just that brutal twist and things that it seemed very dramatic and dark and different and out of nowhere. And two of the favorite characters dying. And a lot of people just left after that. But also then streaming started picking up, you know, and all of that stuff coming in together. I'd be curious to see. I might have to start adding to my timeline here and make like a whole little project out of it. Like you're saying, maybe after this series ends, we can talk about the whole timeline.
That would be a great segment to do on the show on a regular basis, you know, or parts of the segments of that segment, segments of that line of interest.
Like, do you think it makes more sense to start from the beginning? I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sort of history. Like, remember we used to do the rules list.
Yeah.
Yeah. We stopped doing it because we were focused on other stuff, but I would love to see a return to us continuing to add things to that list.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Like the good important things, like there's always at least one zombie inside every building. Always at least one. So, all right.
We need a Walking Dead podcast historian. That's what we need.
That's it. Well,
just someone to, yeah.
That sounds like a great job for you.
Thank you. I'm hired already? Wow. Yes. Wow.
As the holder of a graduate degree in history, I bestow upon you the mantle of historian.
Yes, from the College of Columbia and not Columbia University. I went to a basic college in Columbia that I paid $500 for. So I am definitely, you know, definitely knowledgeable enough on this subject.
I like
it. I'm very happy to help.
Excellent. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. And so thank you very much again, Gary. It was great continuing on our adventure here. And
as always,
very good pre-production conversation.
As always.
That makes it all worth it. That's, folks, that's why we keep doing, that's why we've never wanted to do this podcast except together or with anybody else. We thought about it over time to keep it going, but I did an episode by a couple of episodes by myself, and Gary did half a season by himself.
Leading up to that, I think we're probably about even now, but leading up to that, you'd done several on your own just to fill in sometimes here and there.
They just
the way our schedules didn't line up sometimes. Sometimes you just take that on.
Yeah, it just didn't, you know.
It never works the same. And then I did, like you said, that season A or season whatever it was called. I did one part of it on my own. It was okay.
I listened to it and I thought you did very good, but I could tell you were like, yeah, in the back of my mind, there's no joy in this. I'm just doing it because of the art, man.
I tried. And I mean, I did find stuff even still to get excited to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's different not having someone to throw it off of. And then you and I have our famous side conversations in between everything.
Indeed.
You know, it makes it a little different when you don't have a buddy to talk about it and like share That's opinions true. And bring up different stuff you didn't even notice or think about. You know, it's a better way to enjoy things.
Indeed. Again, you can leave your comments and feedback by emailing us at twdpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, there's never been a better time to be
a dork.
That too. Or
a nerd. Yep.
So stay safe, Steinhatchee, Florida.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What's that famous location, sir?
That's just a town in Florida that I picked off the map.
It's somewhere. A lot of times you have a reason to like reference things.
I was just was looking for a name, and I thought, oh, that sounds like an interesting name. Like there was a Mayo, Florida, right near there.
Really?
I thought Mayo, and then of course there was a Williston, Florida. And I'm more familiar with Williston, North Dakota.
That's our show for today. Thanks for joining us. Please take a moment and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Walking Dead Podcast. If you like the show, let us know what you think. You can email comments and feedback to twdpodcast@gmail.com. You can also post comments on our Facebook page. The Walking Dead podcast can be heard at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and SoundCloud. If you're an Android user, you can also download a dedicated Android app at playerfm.com and the Google Store. Please help support the Walking Dead podcast by visiting our sponsor, audible.com, and signing up for your free, no-obligation trial membership at audibletrial.com/dead. Many of our sound effects are provided courtesy of free SFX. Please check them out for all your sound effects needs at www.freesfx.co.uk. Once again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you back here for the next episode of The Walking Dead Podcast.